Welcome to the Grandstand Golf Podcast. This is the weekend golf update for the 2021 Wells Fargo Championship. I am your host, Adam Bapty, and as always, I'm joined by my brothers, Kevin.
Hey, everyone.
And Craig.
Hey, guys. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there listening.
That's right. It's probably going to be a day later, but happy Mother's Day, a late Mother's Day to all the mothers. Hey,
you can never say it too many times.
That's absolutely That's true. It is Mother's Day, so thank you to our wives and mothers for, or I guess our singular mother, for everything that you do for us. And let's get into this.
Everything you have done and continue to do for us.
Exactly. Just being the best mother that could ever be out there, ever.
Oh,
We win.
Brown noser over there.
Globoy always has to take it one step further.
Yeah. Okay, guys, let's talk some golf here. We had the 2021 Wells Fargo Championship. Rory is back in the winner's circle. Craig, give us a little bit of a tournament recap here.
Well, I mean, let me contain my... I'm just excited. Usually we're about 20 minutes in and I have to bring up Rory when he has nothing to do with the tournament. So we get to start off the top. It's been, I think, something like 18 months, 19 months. It was 2019, pre-pandemic, last time we saw Rory in the winner's circle. He went out there. He was top 20 off the tee, top 20 approach. He was third in putting this week, so he did a lot of work with the flat stick, which is an encouraging thing, I think. You know, it would be easy to see Rory do this just with his driver, and you know, it might not give us the same confidence, but the one big one to me. So Rory has now won the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow three times.
Right.
His next start will be at the PGA Championship, a tournament he has won two times. So do you think he can go back-to-back hat tricks here and go right?
Including at this venue.
At Kiowa, at a place that he has won it before. So my question to you guys is, how much more confidence does this give you on Rory going into the PGA Championship in 2 weeks?
Tons.
I mean, it's a ton. I think the question I'd throw back to both of you, is he the favorite of everyone, of the entire field? DJ, Rom, everybody, Bryson. Is Rory now the favorite, just like taking into that history a little bit?
I mean, he's catapulted himself into the discussion. He's top five for sure.
Yeah, I think top five. Yeah,
I think anyone.
I'd say top two or three.
I'd say anyone of the DJ, JT, Rom, Bryson, Rory is now.
But the thing is, you look at who the favorites would be. Rom just missed a cut for the first time in 22 starts. Yeah. JT, his putter woes are, you know, he's
they're there.
He's
present.
Killing it tee to green, but his putter has given him all kinds of trouble. Bryson, I mean, we don't know if he's going to remember to stick around for the weekend or not. You know, so I think
DJ's slumping.
I think that there's more potential right now for Rory. There's more potential for Rory to vault right into the favorite than if Rom was still on a real hot streak, or if JT had everything working right now. I think it's more vulnerable up top right now.
The only reason I would say he might not be the outright favorite is just it's a small sample size. You know, he had been struggling for a while, and he's flashed at a you know, kind of a horse for course kind of venue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I don't know about outright favorite, but yeah, he's absolutely in the discussion.
See, I think, I don't know if Craig will have more Rory data later in the show, but I kind of challenge the whole struggling thing. Like, it's been a long time since he's won, without a doubt. That's been a long time for his career. But has he really been that bad? Like,
or has
he
just been... Yes.
For sure, but it's compared to Rory, so like it hasn't been that bad compared to a PGA professional, but compared to the guy that, you know, we were just talking before we came online, like probably the best golfer the past decade. So obviously it's not quite Tiger, but it's sort of like Tiger, where you measure, the scale is different that you measure Rory by. And so I mean, he had fallen to the lowest ranking he had since he was 18 or 19 years old, you know, so
13th in the world. He was really scraping the bottom there.
Wasn't he down to 15th there at one point? I don't know. Regardless, it was for Rory, it was bad. But yeah, the reality is he's just so good that even when he was playing bad, he was still like getting top 10s randomly. And
yeah,
I mean, I think his low point was at like the Players there. He was an a not even close to competitive missed cut there, and then missing the cut at the Masters. Like, there's some red flags happening for sure. Because Rory, typically, his floor is so high. Like, you were just talking about, Craig, that, like, he kind of, when he's not playing his best, he's still in the top 30 a lot of the time, you know?
And I think not seeing him, like, I can't even remember the last time we really saw him in contention.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, you kind of think once every three or four starts that he's really part of the story. But I think one of the other ones that I think is really interesting is we saw JT fell going into the Players. He had fallen, I think, to a 22-1 favorite going into the Players.
Right.
And then he won it. And then very quickly was back to being a favorite in tournaments.
Yeah.
And Rory, I think it was the first time they said that he had fallen to at least a 20-1. Yeah. Or, you know, into the 20s.
18, 20, 22. Yeah.
Yeah. However long, and then he goes and wins it. So I guess long story short is anytime one of these guys falls in, up into the 20s, then take them because they always have a shot. They turn around in a hurry.
Yeah.
But that's kind of interesting what you said about those top five guys looking at the PGA Championship, because there is something kind of poor going with all of them. JT, Rom, DJ, all those guys, Bryson. I think the scariest group might be that tier two or like 1B when you get like the Hovlands, the Spieths, the Xander, Cam Smith, like... Those guys are the ones that might be more threatening than these elite guys that all have some kind of little red flag, but there's something a little bit worrisome about all of them.
I think Hovland is one of the most dangerous players in golf right now.
Absolutely. Do you think Victor Hovland, does he like waste shots? Is that his Achilles heel right now? Because he's got so much firepower. Like every time I see him, it looks like he's just streaking up the leaderboard. So what's happening the rest of the time?
No, I think it's just golf is hard. Like, I think everything has to click so much. Like, Rory this week was third in the field in putting. So what did, how many strokes back was Hovland?
Finished two back.
Two back, yeah, sorry, because Rory bogeyed there. Everything just kind of has to go right. Like, the difference between these guys getting... consistent top 10s, top 5s, and popping for the win is that you kind of have to play mistake-free, or like you have to get those extra couple putts to drop or something. But he's doing all the things. It just all needs to click and everything kind of go perfectly for a week, and then he'll take one down. So I was lucky enough to see our mother today on Mother's Day. And the one thing, like my one takeaway, both mom and dad were talking about golf, and my one takeaway is that Victor Hovland is a superstar in the making, because at one point they are arguing about like who is a Victor fan first, and like both of them were just gushing about how much they liked Victor Hovland, and like they were trying to argue about who liked him first. It was like hipsters arguing about a band.
See, I'm in a different province, and I had the pleasure to, you know, have a little Skype call with mom. And out of nowhere, she was talking about Hovland. Like, I didn't even segue to golf, and she brought up Hovland today.
Yeah, but like I think, you know, of this kind of next wave, I think Morikawa is a very charismatic guy too, but I think Hovland just kind of has that it factor. He's already won a lot of fans, and as he gets more and more time in contention, in big tournaments, all this kind of stuff, he's just going to win more and more fans as we go.
Yeah. Well, and with our mom's prowess in fantasy sports, and obviously she has a keen eye for talent, for her to, like, you know, pick Hovland, it's saying something.
Yeah.
What is the equivalent of getting a fan's jersey in golf? How do I get a Hovland jersey?
That's what I don't know. What we need to find out.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the tournament a little bit. So Rory was kind of in the conversation. He's in the last group with Keith Mitchell. Gary Woodland kind of got himself into a tie with Rory for a little bit. Looked like it'd be a two-man, three-man race. Kind of, you know, at the close of the back nine, entering the second nine. What did you guys think? Was it always Rory's to lose? Or did Keith Mitchell look pressing at times? Did Gary Woodland look like he was going to get it? What did you guys think?
I never really thought Gary Woodland was going to get it. He did make a little push there around the turn, but I kind of think it's just because he played those holes first, where there's a couple scoring holes.
Yeah,
I did think that Keith Mitchell was looking dangerous there for a while, but his putter just went ice cold, like as he made the turn, and then onto the back nine, he couldn't make anything. He wasn't even really scaring the hole on a lot of his putts. So at that point, it with how Rory was playing, it definitely became his tournament to lose.
I actually was surprised how well Keith Mitchell hung in there. He did hit a couple key putts early on, you know, par saver type things early on, and then had some pretty good approaches, was setting himself up, getting scoring opportunities. Rory was just hitting more putts, and that seemed to be...
Yeah, Keith Mitchell, it also felt like he really was shooting himself in the foot, you know, even early on, like his back-to-back bogeys. I mean, that first one, so it felt like he just has the firepower. But, you know, I'm looking at five. He was in the middle of the fairway. That was the one where he had a pitching wedge or I don't know exactly what, some kind of wedge in. And he almost stuck it, but it spun back off the front of the green.
Yeah.
Right. He had a bad chip where they were saying he should have putted it. But it was one of these things where, like, it felt like he kept giving himself chances to do something good, especially off the tee, giving himself chances, and then just really couldn't convert, whether it was poor short game or just couldn't hit the approaches or what. But it felt longer than I thought into the match that he still had a chance, though, and could have turned it on.
And really, even on, like, he hit a great shot into 16 for his second shot there, and he had about... maybe 15 feet for birdie. Mm-hmm. He was inside Rory. Rory missed. I think if he made that, it went to a one-shot lead for Rory with two tough holes to play. Like, it's anybody's game at that point. So even on 16, if he could have bought himself a putt at that point, he was right back in it. So, I give him credit for hanging in as long as he did. It's kind of gut-wrenching that it sounds like he needed a T2 or better to get into the PGA Championship and ended up one shot back of that. So that's too bad because he obviously had a great week.
Yeah, it also is just a little bit of whiplash coming off the week that he just had because what, he shoot an 82 or something?
I feel like a Sunday? Couple positional points there might have helped a little bit more than like trying to get it all back on one weekend.
But like, it's just shocking. It's one of the things that's shocking about PGA golf is these guys, like he threw away, I think it was -8 putting last week. So
I think in a single round on Sunday.
Oh, was it just that was just on Sunday? So, like, you know, he was positive this week putting, not a ton, but you know, the fact that you can go from as bad as he looked the week before to being, you know, the 54 hole leader and being in contention against Rory McIlroy, Abe Anser, and Victor Hovland, you know, it's impressive how good these guys are. It's whether the scoring can happen or not.
Well, did you hear what happened with his putter?
It was bent, apparently. I didn't hear exactly. I just heard it was bent.
I know. I was kind of like in and out of broadcast and like trying to hear. And like, he had to get it fit. Like, he called his equipment guy the Monday or the Sunday after Valspar, and it was like bent or crooked or something. And that's why like all his alignment was off. How can that happen? That's crazy.
Yeah. So just back to Rory real quick. I don't want to beat the Rory horse, but so and last hole there.
Yes, you do.
I do, yeah. We got some PGA previews coming up. I can get into Rory a bit more. But in terms of the play, so last hole there, you know, can't go left. Somehow he pulls it left to left.
It kicks
off the hill.
Hard.
So that swing is what makes me think he might not be the favorite going to the PGA Championship. Because, like, you have so many things that are fine there or acceptable, you just can't do what he did. That's the only thing that brings like double into play.
But I also, I mean, they were talking about early on that, you know, he did not have a good feel with his driver leaving the driving range, and he hit extra balls and all that. So probably good of him to get a squeeze a 68 out of it. I would rather see him hit driver up there as far as he can. And
I kind of miss that a little bit. Is he trying to move to a cut?
He's only going to fade his driver. If he wants to go with a little bit of a draw, he'll pull his 3-wood, which is interesting with trouble left. He pulled a 3-wood on 18. So I don't know if he was really not confident at all in his driver.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's like he's traditionally
natural, he used to
hit
be
a draw with his driver, didn't he?
So now I think it just must be part of what he's doing with Pete Cowan and... He feels that that's a more repeatable movement for him. I don't know the details, but that is what he said, is that essentially sticking with a cut.
The trend
it's hard to trust,
like,
though. If it's like, if it's what you're transitioning to, like, it is a hard thing to trust that new swing. I guess they were talking about that a little bit on the broadcast as well, mm-hmm. but like stepping up on 18 and that's your new shot is to peel it right off of the water. It's hard to trust that.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you saying though? That's the new thing.
It's to only work your driver one way. Like,
yeah. And I think that's a smart thing to do. Like,
With how far and how high, I mean, every single hole, if you see these guys that are in the top 50, you know, in driving distance or top 100 in driving distance, they're cutting corners, they're going over trees that it doesn't really matter how the hole's shaped, it seems like, in most courses. So play your fade that, you know, starts way over the left trees and have it come back like he did on what was it, three where he hit it, or two where he hit it 372 yards, like to the front of the green on the par four, just absolutely smash it over the trees, playing the course like that. But yeah, work it. There's enough area, I guess, to work it just one way on most of these courses.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's pretty, like, from a data analytics point of view, I think there's pretty good stats to back up that this is the better approach. That it's one of these sort of old school golf things where working it both ways will work out better for you. But I think the numbers are backing up more and more that it actually doesn't, and you're better off because it's easier. The loft that the three wood adds essentially makes it easier to draw it. And so people who try to move both ways with the driver, it just introduces more misses to their golf swing.
Yeah.
And misses both ways. But anyways, regardless, so what were you, so he hits the draw the, or the three wood there. Good decision. I mean, obviously it turned out to be a good decision, but taking the drop out of the, you know, edge of the creek there.
I don't think he could have, I think the wrong decision would have been trying to go back to the fairway. I thought when he was crouching down, screaming,
you're going to flub this into the creek to me.
Totally. 100%. When they were initially pacing off to the left, I'm like, that's a great call.
Yeah.
And then when they did ultimately decide to drop, I guess, and then drop, pick it up and place it, you get a better lie and he's able to smash it. It seemed like the
ball was still quite a bit below his feet, but yeah. I mean, I also, for some reason, I thought he would have more club there. I didn't think it was going to be an 8-iron. So that was the hesitancy I would have.
So with how it works with the PGA Tour and the grandstands or hospitality area or whatever that is, could he have just, like, fired it into that...
Smashed it up
there. Smashed it into that tent there and then, like, gotten a drop right up there? Because, like, you know, I know it's kind of cheese ball, but that might have been this, like... better play, kind of gives them a more level lie potentially, but I thought that that's sort of what they were looking at, but thinking,
so
like,
I think
we got to move all these people and be like,
yeah,
I'm trying
no, but
to
I
hit
think essentially
right
it was the angle in, so I think it the further left gave him a harder angle
right
because what he was saying and to I forget what his caddy's name is there,
Harry or something, I think.
Harry, yeah, that sounds right. That essentially he wanted the angle closer to the creek where he was, and so that's when they just decided, well, like, you know, we could drop it right here. So I mean, and he hit a great 8-iron and made it, you know, an easy 2-putt to take it down.
Yes, we are grandstand golf. Yeah. So we started this in a pandemic. There's been no fans. Now that there's grandstand, there's the blue wall to LPGA.
Are we pro people hitting into grandstands?
Well, I don't know.
Is that an insult?
We need to really figure out
the grandstands
rule book.
I think the grandstands need to be in play more. It's like, if you're behind a grandstand, don't get line of sight. You go over it or chip around it.
That's a
bold. It would introduce something, that's for sure.
Okay, so looking at the leaderboard, how it finished didn't feel like how it was, I mean, the entire day to me. So we had Victor Hovland go birdie on 14, 15, got himself to 8-under. Abe Anser went birdie, 15, 16, 17, got himself to 9-under. Abe Anser was kind of a late addition to the broadcast a little bit. Did you guys think that was in play?
Well, I didn't think it was in play until he birdied 16, 17. And then it was very, I thought if he birdied 18, 10 seemed to be pretty good at that point. Like, I think
for sure
that was before Rory got it to 11. Even though you knew Rory had a couple scoring holes, he still had to get through 16, 17, 18. Like, 10 looked pretty good. And Anser gave it a run there on 18 too. Hey, that was like,
yeah, it was good putt.
Really,
it felt a little bit when they first started showing Anser, you know, 14, 15, he made the birdie. It felt a little bit like they're trying to, you know, manufacture a contender here. And then he, you know, and then it was birdie, and then it was birdie, and then, you know, almost, and it was like, oh man, he's going to give it a run here. But man, great, great tournament from Abe Anser. You know, a guy who hasn't won yet. I'm a big Anser fan. I can't, you know, I'd love to see Rory come back and get his win here, but it definitely would not have been super disappointing if Anser could have gotten his first PGA Tour win.
Yeah, you got to think it's only a matter of time. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Adam.
Yeah, it's if not when with Anser. I think mm-hmm. we can all agree with that. No, yeah. I was going to say a playoff would have been interesting.
Sorry, it's when, not if.
Right. I don't know. It's getting late on
it's
Sunday.
It's going to happen. We just don't know.
I've done more things today than I usually have. I don't know. Okay, let's talk about a couple other story guys. You guys ready to move on from the leaderboard? Talk a few.
Well, yeah. So Victor Hovland, just a stud. You know, great weekend, 68, 67. You know, we talked about him. He's a superstar in the making. If not already.
Okay, so one of the weirdest storylines of the week: Bryson triple bogeys like the seventh hole, his third to last hole. Goes to, I think, three over at that point. Gets a birdie coming back and is two over. Something like tied for 89th when he finishes his day Friday morning. Figures there's not going to be any chance that he's going to play the weekend. Takes
and
off
I think at that point, the cut line is even.
Yeah.
It's technically even, but they're thinking
but
it can
it
go
was
to plus
expected
one.
To, yeah.
But, so he jets off back to Dallas, right? Is that that's where he went
yeah.
to?
Yeah.
Where he
yeah.
lives? He goes back yeah. to Dallas. And I think while he is in the air, someone called him or he got notified that like, hey, you're tied for 67th yeah. right now, by the way. They didn't have enough fuel to turn around, had to land, couldn't get back out until I think 2:45 Saturday morning for his Saturday AM tee time. Got there, got to the range a little bit, and then ultimately had a great weekend to finish
backdoor top 10.
How absurd is the story? Like, how can you imagine leaving and not, I mean, can you imagine not logging on to data golf and being like, does plus two have a chance to be a cut line?
Well, it didn't. Well, like, it seemed like there's so many people. It turned into carnage on Friday afternoon, really. It was what happened,
but it was projected to, like, this is the one of the things I don't understand. Like data golf is something that anyone who like bets or plays fantasy golf or anything knows about data golf. And, you know, it was still, I think plus one was probably still favored at that point, but
yeah,
they would have been given at least 25 to a third, you know, 25% to a third chance that it was moving to plus two, even at that point. And so
I don't know about early on, like it started.
Well, no,
because
even at the start of the day, it was. Yeah.
Because they've built in weather now.
They factor in weather now. So
okay.
So they had factored in that it was going to get more difficult, and it's just like, I don't know how you're like, you know, what does that cost them? 40 grand maybe? However much it costs them to private jet both ways.
Well, so he figured he needed to play well enough to make it worth it.
Yeah,
worth
no
the trip.
Kidding.
You need to pay off the trip.
I think one of the interesting things is a lot of people would have just withdrawn at that point. And so, you know, props to him for not. I think that he easily could have. But I think that's also one of these things where if it wasn't Bryson, like if it's someone who thinks their chances of coming back and making a $10,000 check or something, you know, they may be less likely to turn around and come
yeah,
back.
Like, he doesn't need the FedEx Cup points. He doesn't really need that single tournament check. Like, let's be perfectly honest. He has more sponsors than the 100 FedEx ranked
teams.
To 150 combined. But yeah, I mean, props to him. He woke up in the middle of the night to come back and played outstanding.
And I would think in large part because the perception that if he didn't, he probably would have got ragged on pretty good.
That yeah. probably has a little bit of a factor.
Yeah, maybe
I mean, the
just,
fact that everything
yeah,
Bryson does is under a microscope. And so if he, you know, if he just took off and had made the cut and didn't come back, then he definitely would have not, it would not have gone over well with the media.
Well, let's also talk about the elephant in the room here too, that he was Adam's one and done pick. And I was looking at the leaderboard there on Friday thinking, ooh, Adam, that one's gonna hurt. You know,
I suppose Craig, me and Kevin had Max Homa Max well Homa. Inside the cut line.
I was just gonna set the stage with you guys had Max Homa who ejected very early. So
after
all you could do
seven
was
holes,
hope
that was over. Yeah. So
let's be perfectly honest, losing Max Homa stings a lot less than if Bryson missed the cut. Like, that would have been sure.
As a Homa fan, it was less than ideal, but to know you're trading Homa for Bryson,
exactly,
you know, the one and done, I would have probably been happy to take that.
Worst thing about it is both Kevin and I, after we make our picks on Wednesday, message that, like, man, I really had a hard time not picking Rory this week. Like, it just felt like it was a good Rory week, and then lo and behold, yeah.
And it's just all you want, you just wanted to see some flash from Rory before. Yeah, any
signs of life, you would have gone cut
before. Like,
or like a good three holes and like some, you know, a good three-hole stretch. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of guys who missed the cut, there is a lot of notables who seem to not fare well at Quill Hollow Thursday, Friday. Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Will Zalatoris, John Rahm. Craig, you're going to have to address this DFS elephant in the room at some point.
Yeah, we'll jump into that in the good bets, bad bets.
Okay, and Sungjae Im, Max Homa, on and on and on. So of those kind of like stars, let's say top 30-ish players in the world, who are you most worried about from that kind of group?
Well, I think I'll probably end up walking all over Kevin's stock down here. But you maybe want, you could take it away there, Kev, if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just, my stock down this week is Patrick Cantlay. Like, I am worried about Patrick Cantlay. He's missed his last three cuts. He's missed four of the last five. His last six tournaments, he's made two cuts. Top 20 in both those tournaments. So when he makes the cut, he seems to be playing okay. And like prior to this recent struggle, he was playing phenomenal. Like he was a killer out there. So he was a guy who you felt like could win any tournament, but now all of a sudden he is ice cold, and it's not like there's not really any known, I haven't heard of any reason for it. And it doesn't.
Well,
he
is putting very poorly. He's changed his putter a few times.
I'm worried about him. In the bag every week.
Like I said, it goes back to the, you know, we've had these discussions about Cantlay many times since we've been doing this podcast, but it's just because the expectation for him is that he could win any week, and like to miss three cuts in a row when you expect a guy might be winning is like kind of jarring. So
and the other thing, you know, some of the top players are more streaky, where you'll see them. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe a Patrick Reed, where, you know, he might not play the best, but then he'll come out and win a tournament. But Cantlay, you don't really think of him that way. You think of him more as someone who week in, week out, he's going to be top 30 to, you know, contending. And so I have heard rumors there's a swing change happening. I don't know if that is in reaction to poor play, or if that is something that he has been undertaking. But that is just, I think, a rumor I stumbled across on Twitter, so
that's troubling though. I don't think we're going to talk about this person later on, but I want to bring up Tony Finau. So at the start of 2021, he went 4nd, 2nd, 2nd. His last few have been, so going back to the players, miscut, T28 at the match play, so not getting out, miscut at Valero Texas, a T10 at Masters, and a miscut here. That's three miscuts in his last four stroke play events.
Don't forget, he flashed a little at the Zurich, though. It's not on there, but, you know, Zurich, he played decent.
Yeah,
but yeah, I do have concerns about Tony. Like, it's one of the things about him is he's just been, again, a very consistent, you know, top 20, top 10 guy. So he's, after that run of seconds, he's been dipping, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm less worried. I'm way more worried about Patrick Cantlay, but I think Finau is just kind of in a little. He does seem a little bit more streaky than, I think, as Craig was mentioning. Cantlay's just like steady, 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 pop, steady, steady, steady. Finau's a little bit more up and down, I think.
Well, I think if Finau is a really consistent guy, to be honest, but I think maybe he's just in a bit of a rut. I hope so. He's got so much game.
You know, I'm going to get into Willie Z and my stock down, but Rahm, to me, I'm not worried about it. I'll get into my exposure to him this week, but, you know, he came out and he had a really bad Thursday. And
Almost battled back to make the cut.
And he could have done exactly what Bryson could have done.
He could have easily had a backdoor top 10. We're talking about a guy who, you know, in retrospect, putting a heavy exposure on him. We're talking about a guy that's in the first weeks of being a father, having a, you know, stumbling out of the gates on a Thursday in the first tournament he's really played. You know, the Masters happened right after they had the kid. You know, little baby Kepa. So I think it's one of those things that's completely excusable. I think Rom's playing next week. I am in no way moving any stock down on him, because I think, if anything, he's just, I think he's more dangerous this week than I felt coming into the Quail Hollow.
Craig's doubling down.
Okay,
so another guy we need to talk about, Phil Mickelson, goes out, shoots 64, he's 7 under, follows that up with a 75, a 76, a 76, and moves all the way back to 7 over, finishes a solo 69th in the tournament. What's going on with Phil? Who wants to jump into this discussion?
I think that we need to channel our inner Denny Greens here. He is who we thought he was.
He
let him off the hook. I mean, it was awesome to daydream for a little bit when he jumped out there and was birdieing. What was he, like 5 under after 8 or something like that on Thursday? It was fun to think that maybe he would be contending in this tournament, but you know, he had to at least get through Friday before, and he didn't really. And then it just went from bad to worse kind of after that. But I mean, I would love to see it. I would have loved to see him win and qualify for the US Open and, you know, kind of get himself back into relevance. But unfortunately, the trend has been the other way, and I don't really see that changing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, I think Phil has enough game still that there could, you know, if everything clicks, I think he could win a tournament in his 50s. But
the only problem is 72 holes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And, you know, I said it to Adam on our Wednesday show. He was talking about Phil as a play. And I was like, honestly, like, the biggest worry I have about Phil, and he, you know, he comes out and he speaks openly about that. This is that he just loses interest and he loses focus. And like, it's just, it's, you know, it's a grind.
We need to get, like, I don't know, like, Damon or Max Homa, like, kind of edge him on Tuesday, Wednesday, get him fired up.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Or, and then get, like, Colt Nosson, like, following him, like, bet you can't hit that one, Phil. And he's like, oh, yeah.
Now, I do think potentially the more crowds we get, the better. Like, I think that is one of those things that can potentially Phil through a week if he does get into contention and, you know, plays a little bit better to stay in. I think, you know, if he is in contention come Sunday, I think it's fine. It's more, can he, you know, kind of take what happened in that first round and balance it, you know, let it coast through till Sunday.
Middle 36.
I really have, like, no doubt that little Twitter exchange and trash talking that he was doing with Joel Damon, like, had an impact on the way he played on Thursday. You know, like, those guys both went out and played awesome.
Now, let's see here. I think Damon got him by, where did Damon end up?
Who was in that group? Was it Taylor Gooch? Mid-20s,
I think.
Oh, yeah, Todd, tied for 18th. Yeah. Lanto Griffin.
Yeah.
He tweeted out that picture of Will Smith at the end of Fresh Prince with just like an empty living room. Oh, that's good. Okay. Should we jump into three stars here, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So three stars. I got a little bit of an asterisk. Call it an amateur asterisk or whatever, but I'm going to give a quick fourth star to the story I heard, I think Friday or Saturday. It's Lev Grinberg. He's 13 years old, and he made it through the sectional qualifying for the U.S. Open. He shot a 70 and advanced to the final stage of the U.S. Open qualifying. Apparently, he's just like an absolute golf phenom at 13 years old. If he does qualify, he would be the youngest male ever to play in a major championship. So that's just something to maybe look out for. I don't know exactly when the final stage of the U.S. Open qualifying is, but this 13-year-old Lev Grinberg is making a run at it.
Way to go, Lev.
He's my 4-star.
Yeah. It'd be awesome. It'd be a great story.
I mean,
3rd star.
The thing that surprises me about that is also a little bit that that like back in the day on, you know, when the Open Championship was in its infancy, that
like Young Tom?
Young Tom.
Well, I'm trying to think. So there was a year, and I'll try to be quick in this tangent, but there was a year where they wouldn't let Young Tom play. And so they made this like separate caddies boys event, and he ended up posting a score that would have won the Open Championship. but this is before he went on to win, I think, however many straight.
Three in a row, I think,
would have thought in those early years that there just would have been one random year where some super young, like the same thing with old Tom Morris playing in it when he was 70 plus, you know.
Or like, who was it, Ty Tyrone or... Who's that guy in the early 2000s?
Ty Treon?
Yeah, Ty Treon. He was in the Tiger Woods game. I remember that. Okay, third star, Alex Jaca. He won the Champion Tour Regions Tradition, a major on the Champions Tour. It was only he's just 50 years old. It's his third start on the Champions Tour. He got in as an alternate when Bill Haas withdrew. His other two Champion Tour starts came as a Monday qualifier. He won in a playoff over Steve Stricker. Steve Stricker, probably one of the favorites with Longer and whoever else coming in.
I think Steve Stricker won the event in 2019, last time it was played.
Right. So there you go. But yeah, Jaca, I mean, 50 years old now. He's won on five tours, the PGA Tour, the European Tour, the Web.com Tour, the Outlaw Tour, the kind of pop up during the pandemic, won a couple times there, and now the Champions Tour. Just kind of a, I don't know, one of those storybook ones where it's just cool to see that guy come from an alternate and win the major.
Yeah.
What, a competitor much, eh? Yeah. Whatever game
gamer.
You can get.
Just a gamer.
And now he's got like full status or like full exemption or whatever on the Champions Tour, doesn't he?
It's a pretty boss way to get full status. Just come into your first major and win it as an alternate. Okay, second star over on the European Tour, Canary Islands again. Garrick Higo is dominating. Craig's pick this week. I mean, I'll give Craig a little bit of props.
He was also the top. I think he's the favorite going in.
Yeah. It's his second win in three events. He won by six strokes. He is now up to 51st in the world. And this guy, he's so good. I mean, whatever tour he's on, he's won twice in each of the past three seasons, obviously has a ton more time left in 2021, but he has kind of won himself into a whole different kind of tournament schedule from here on out with WGCs and majors and all that.
He's into the PGA.
Without a doubt. Yep.
Yeah. He's 51 now in the world.
Yeah, so
I also think, so you know, really interesting game. So, you know, this is a guy that Adam sort of got me onto, but 21 years old, he's just a prodigy in the short game. Like his scoring game is awesome. So I think that once we see more and more of him, he is the type of player who is going to win. Like, you know, those players. It's almost sort of like a Christian Bezuidenhout. I don't know. I mean, it's tough because we haven't seen enough of him against the highest levels of competition to know how he can measure up on the most difficult courses and all this kind of stuff. But man, if you have a player like that on some of these shorter courses on the PGA Tour, you know, he's one of these people that can go low in those situations. So it'll be interesting to see if he can, you know, at Kiowa, very tough, long course, whether that suits him at all. I don't think so, but we'll see. We'll see what kind of chops he has.
I think that when he won a couple of weeks ago, I put a little warning up to Kevin and his boy, Bobby Mack, as the top lefty in the world. He's sitting there at 45 and Higo is now definitely just clipping at his heels as the top lefty in the world.
Yeah.
So Bobby Mack, another one to watch out for at the PGA.
So there was the top, I guess, top 12, but other than Higo, the top 11 guys were kind of bunched within three shots, and then Higo's six clear of them. Like it wasn't just a win, it was like a demonstration, you know, like it was
And I mean, it's not a Rolex Series event or the toughest, I mean, event the European Tour will have, but winning by six strokes on any tour at any event
is, against professional golfers.
Against professional golfers is huge. Like, you're playing on a different level, a completely different level.
Here, I got a quote here that I want to read. So, it's unreal. I played so well today. I hit the ball very nicely, so it was a lot less stressful than last time because I was hitting it a lot better. I can't believe it happened so quickly again, but my game has been so good. but my game has been good, so I can believe it as well. I like it. It's a little confidence there.
I'm so good. I just, I guess I can believe it.
I can believe it. I'm playing really good golf right now.
I was actually just brushing up on Higo there before we got going tonight. And he's definitely a guy I could find myself cheering for.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2021's Bobby Mack, I want to say, you know? That's what I'm thinking. Okay, first start. I got to give it to Rory, guys. Give it to Roars. First win in 553 days. First win as a dad. One on Mother's Day. First Mother's Day for Erica, his wife.
Got a little choked up there.
Got a little bit choked up. Obviously, fans back help Rory. We talked about Phil, but it definitely helps Rory. I mean... Just on Twitter this weekend, like, golf is much better when Rory is playing his best golf. It just makes everything about the tournament. I don't know. I've got a smirk
on my face. Eh?
Craig's a resident, I mean, Rory homer, but it just made the weekend so much better, I feel like, when he is playing well and in contention.
Yeah. I agree.
I think one of the, like, huge flexes is, you know, as there's like a little bit of confusion with the camera on 18 there when, you know, they were kind of showing the creek and they didn't know if that was his ball or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the camera gets a close up shot of it and it's just like roars right on the side. And it's like, oh yeah, that's definitely his. Like, when you get him from the factory with your nickname on it, then it makes it a little easier to identify.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's our three stars. Let's move on to our DFS pick segment for the week. This is our pick sheet that we send out every Wednesday on Twitter. And guys, it's a little bit of a bloodbath out here today. I'll just go into your winners. You both had John Rahm, missed cut. I had Bryson DeChambeau, who made the cut on the number, but squeaked into a top 10 for me. Sleeper, also kind of messy. So let's go with the worst first. Craig got Cameron Tringali, missed cut. Kevin had Carlos Ortiz. I had him in a bunch of DFS lineups, and he faded well back to T65.
But like a great call early on.
I completely agree.
And then your boy.
So here. I went Phil Mickelson 175-1. I was like, does this actually have a chance? I think I put an each way on it. So I'm like, hey, Phil, you just need to get into a top five here, buddy. Let's hold on to this for a couple of days. Yeah. By Friday, that was kind of toast. Saturday, I was like, okay, there's no chance this is coming back. So he finished 69th. Fade. Got some pretty good fades here.
Good fades, yeah.
Will Zalatoris was my fade. He missed the cut. Craig went with Patrick Cantlay. Low-hanging fruit, kind of a low blow, but he did miss the cut as well. A good fade. Good fade. Kevin went with Patrick Reed, T6. What were you thinking there, Kev?
Just not really afraid to throw him under the bus. Whenever I'm having a hard time coming up with a fade...
You know, hey, Patrick Reed's in this tournament.
Who's a guy?
He has been struggling with his ball striking. It just
hasn't been great.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's also always within the top 10 of the odds that week. So
yeah,
which is what we're looking for with our fades.
Yeah,
yeah. Top Canadian, we all went with Corey Connors. He was T43, got that hole in one, and kind of fell apart after that on Sunday. Nick Taylor,
he took it.
Was the number one Canadian, T26. He had a nice day today with a 69. And then our one and dones. You guys, I don't know if there's some collusion on Tuesday or Wednesday, but you both went with Max Homa, defending champion, playing well. Ended up with $0 in your pocket, 0 points on the board. I went with Bryson. I just felt it was a tough test. It's a long course. Okay, now's my time to pull out the Bryson. You know, got T9, got me a couple $100,000.
What do you think? Are you happy? Are you satisfied with that?
You know, it's right in that middling ground where I don't know how to feel. I'm not unhappy with it, but given everything this week and how that happened, like if he was first and then fell off, I'd probably be more choked. But after Friday, any amount of points would have been good for me. So yes, I'm happy with it.
I'm so far I'm so like wrapped up in my own head with this 1-10 right now. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get out of it.
Well, the thing is, like, the cupboards, it's at this awkward point for me where, like, I've got a handful of studs left, and then I've, like, picked clean kind of that next level, and so, like, I know I want to save some of these studs for big tournaments that are coming up, but, like, oh, man, like, what am I going with then, you know?
It's something we talk about on the podcast every week. I might post again who we've played, you know, our whole history. We went back to the start of the PGA Tour season with the Safeway. So we're well into, I mean, what, like 30 some events now. So we've used up quite a bit of guys. So I'll post that either on Twitter or on our website so everyone can kind of see where we've gone right and where we've gone wrong. But the totals right now are Craig at 5.4 million. I'm at 4.8 million. And Kevin is 4.4 million, still just a winner's away shot from getting to first place.
Well, that's the thing. I haven't hit my winner. We're
32 weeks in now, so.
Okay.
You guys have both hit a winner. I haven't hit one yet, so I'm really, you know, I'm riding on the back of a couple good good major finishes there with Dustin and Rahm, so.
Yep.
Yeah, Kevin had five top tens in his first six. I don't know if he's had five since.
No, I haven't. For sure I haven't. I've got into this like thing where I want to pick a guy, but I'm like, no, I think this is the smart pick. You know what I found? Defending champions are not good picks. They're not good picks.
No.
I also think like you just got to go with your gut. Like that's what Adam's demonstrated. His freaking Siwoo Kim pick, I still think is the pick of the year.
What about his Carlos Ortiz pick? He didn't do that in one and done, but
that's true.
I've already moved on from that. I've already moved on. That's such a that's one stings.
I've been chasing that ever since. I picked Carlos Ortiz as my sleeve like three times. Try to catch some of that magic.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Our European Tour race to the Dubai Fantasy League is still going. Malcolm Young had Higo as the captain. He took home the weekly win. Colin Brown is still in the top spot. Craig is clipping at his heels.
Didn't I have Higo as my captain?
Well, you didn't have enough. I mean, you had to. I mean, a lot of people had Higo as captains. Round out the roster a little bit. Colin Brown in first. Craig is in second, a close second, I believe. And on Mother's Day, I saw that Mom, I believe her name is Grandstand Grandma, is in the top 10 in our league. So watch out for her.
Watch out for her. She always has a way of just like working her way up those leaderboards.
Sneaking her way up. Okay, guys, good bets, bad bets, red bets, green bets. I'm going to throw it right to Craig first because there's going to be a lot of DFS listeners that are asking, Craig, do you have a curse now? Why did you go with Rahm 80% of your DFS lineups?
So, I mean, there's a few reasons, and I think they're good reasons. So, essentially, we had Rahm coming in this week. He had made 22 straight cuts. We had, I would say, question marks up. Well, yeah, okay, so I'd say definitely question marks with JT. Maybe a little bit less so with Bryson. But so DraftKings, we had Rahm as the third-priced guy. I felt like he should have been the first. You know, it's a course that favors distance. It's a course that favors power players. You know, I hammered it. I went 80% exposure. I felt that not only did he have a great, you know, he was coming off however many, eight of the top last 10, he was top 10s.
Top 10s or top 10s? Not top 10s.
I felt like it was a very, very safe cut, very safe top 20, you know, relatively safe top 10 and a decent chance to win. So I was like, man, of all the players up top, I like his floor, I like his ceiling, I like everything about it. So I just hammered it. I felt like it was a, you know, you got to take your stands. And the thing that like frustrates me a bit is that I have taken so many stands with Rory as his price has fallen further and further down. And then like to see him this past week and to see him, I forget what if he was at 10,000 or if he fell into even 9,800, I forget what it was at the start of the week. I know, you know, anyways, so I hammered Rahm. It obviously didn't work out. I did a decent job at the back end of my lineups too, which saved, you know, I got decent squeaking out some return. It was still obviously a down week tournament long. I would say that's definitely the bad bet, but my good bets, Schwartzel was a great one. He was tied for 14th in the tournament. I had decent exposure to him tournament long, but I also, you know, I played him throughout the week in showdowns. And then from after my serious FOMO after the first day, I hammered Rory 100% in showdowns every day afterwards. So I did not kind of get a big win, but I had positive ROI the rest of the week on my showdown. So that felt good. Wow. At least. I just felt like an idiot because I'm so high on Rory all the time. And then for his price to get as low as it did at a course where it's just tough because you start to second guess and play the game theory too much, knowing that his ownership is going to creep up because he has a winning history here. But right. Yeah, anyways, it was a fun week. I like to take stands. It didn't work out, but yeah,
so I got a couple follow-up things. One is giving you props because you won 80% in 20 lineups with Rom. But and the 6 of 6 percentage for the week was 5%. Somehow you managed to get a 6 of 6 tournament long DFS lineup, which is almost absurd to do when 80% of your lineups. Well,
and so the reason is because the four. So essentially, I did 20 lineups, and so I had four that weren't ROM. But I did all of those as the PM AM stack, There was, what was it, ended up being two stroke yep. swing. So they were all, you know, chances are you're throwing all your darts at that side of the dartboard. But the thing is, as I was making those lineups and I was making all the ones with Rom, who was on the wrong side of this, and when we started to talk about how much there could be a favored wave in this week, I was like, man, should I just instead hammer this wave heavy? And I didn't, but you know, that definitely was the angle to go this week, I think.
So I did the same thing. I think four of my lineups were PMAM stacks, looking at that weather. And that's how I came up with my best lineup, because I write notes for kind of, okay, why did I come up with this lineup? And that was, you know, Rory, Woodland, Schwartzel was a really good one. So yeah, definitely some viability to that. My other question, and we'll leave it at this. What do you feel like? I guess it's a two-parter. Will you go up to 80% in the near future or ever again? And what do you feel like to get this kind of cloud lifted? I mean, not just pick a winner. I feel like that's a kind of an outrageous kind of thing to do. But so how do you follow this up?
So how do I follow this up? By just, you know, I don't know that one. But so essentially, I think to me, really, you need to try to get in these GPPs. You need to take stands somewhere because you need to try to get up to the very top of them. So, if I'm putting in 20 lineups and I'm not going to, I forget what I ended up having, but somewhere in the 25 to maybe 28, something like that. I had more players in my pool than I would like. Like I think ideally you want to get less than that. So, if I'm not going to cut down and I'm going to have like a lot of, you know, little exposure to a lot of these longer shots, then I feel like I need to take a stand somewhere and have a heavy play somewhere. And so I think in the future, I'm going to try to be more brutal and cut my whole player pool smaller. But I don't have a problem taking that kind of stand. If I was playing 150 lineups, then I would not do that. Like, I think then you can get more combinations in. So I definitely wouldn't go above 50 probably.
Yeah. I think one of the key things to remember is the result might not be positive, but that doesn't mean that the theory is wrong.
Trust the process.
And that's what we try to do here is we explain through our entire process here, rather than just being like, or if it is a gut feeling, hey, I have a gut feeling about this one, but
when you were asking that question to Craig, Adam, when you asked him if he would do 80% exposure again, I just was hoping he would say yes, absolutely yes. I trust the process.
And it's this person at this course.
I'm calling it's Rory at the PGA Championship in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay, Kevin, how did your any bets?
Oh, it was terrible. I don't know if I should participate in this section because I only have one of the, two bad bets and red bets. It was a miserable week. I was quite high on Max Homa going in. I also was high on Rom, and threw a dart at a board with Carlos Ortiz there, so none of those paid off.
My week was very middling. It looked good on Saturday. I had Woodland, Rory, Reed, Schwartzel, and Mickelson, someone else in a lineup all stacked. And it was kind of in this 20,000 person GBP. I cracked the top 10 at one point in the tournament. It was an incredible return. Kept kind of working its way back when Keith Mitchell kind of, I didn't have Keith Mitchell. You got to get everything perfect to kind of take down these GBPs. So ultimately turned out okay. My bad one was I tried to get a couple flyers going into Sunday with my showdowns. I went Connors and Brendan Steele, and Connors got that ace, which is good, but collapsed after. And Brendan Steele, I think, had at least 3 water balls through his round. So if anyone was watching for the first time for our Sunday show, I apologize, but I think Craig had a couple good ones with.
I had some decent. Yeah, although JT ended up falling off. He had a good start to his day and ended up falling off, but yeah.
Okay, guys.
Sorry, stock one up. Other thing real quick on okay. that, you know, tiny little positive cash for me, but Euro, you know, the Higo pick was picking a favorite, but friggin' Adam pulls out, what's his name,
Maverick Ancliffe, my new favorite Australian, move out Cameron Davis, Maverick Ancliffe, you're off.
Friends off Cam Davis.
Yeah, I don't know. I've just been kind of, I love the European Tour because I feel like it's more research. It's more digging. You're going into the China Tour to find this guy's results. And it's that research that I kind of like, it's really, really fun for me.
Sorry, lay the groundwork though. He was a mid 700 or mid 7000s play. Ended up.
He's 7,500. I think he came out with 70 on Thursday. Not a great start, but then was ripping off 62, 63.
And he's finished his first second?
Solo second. Maverick Ancliffe, he had a bunch of wins on the China Tour, I think 2 years ago. He was like something crazy, like 18th in strokes gained tee to green on the European Tour in 2020. So obviously a really good ball striker. I just figured one of these guys that can win because I can go low. And
yeah, well, I had 4 of 6 get through the cut and I still managed to cash. So in large part due to Maverick Ancliffe. So that was a good one.
There we go. Okay, stock up, stock down. Craig, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I got pretty straightforward ones here. Stock up for me for sure, Gary Woodland. You know, he was someone you brought up on the Wednesday show. I still was hesitant because of, you know, the injuries, the hip. He has not put together a great record of recent. We have seen flashes over the, you know, the early part of the year. But what did he end up there? Fifth, solo fifth. He clearly, when he... is able, I don't know, when he's able to go out there, and I think, I don't know if it's health or just...
It has been health for a lot of the year.
So. Yeah, but like, I don't know if it's sort of, sometimes, you know, when health is an issue, they can't practice like they want to, and like, all it kind of backs up. So I don't know if it's actually health the week of, or if he's been able to practice more, but essentially, he's one of these guys that when he shows up and he has it, he still has it. That's the takeaway for me.
I get the feeling that he's like, he was dealing with that hip for so long that he's kind of started to get back and, from what I understand, being able to play pain free. I think now he's just in that process of kind of getting his confidence back, knowing what he can do, getting the reps in, and I expect him to be, you know, back up on flashing on leaderboards consistently here.
Yeah, he's got game.
If he can stay healthy, I sure hope he can anyways. Yeah, he's definitely so one of my near and dear to my heart, guys.
It's always those soft tissues are always, you know, you're always worried that it's going to creep up again.
Yeah.
This is a whole nother discussion. I'll save for another show, but the injuries in golf are hard for DFS betting community. Webson's dropped out. That was bad for a lot of people, but I have no idea how Gary Woodland is feeling. Like, and you don't even know the reports that they're giving to in their interviews are like,
it's like they're just all trying to Belichick players.
Well, did you hear about Rory? How he
almost
up.
Withdrew.
He almost withdrew because he threw out his neck on Wednesday afternoon.
What were him? What were him and Wem doing on Wednesday?
I went my hair back around. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah, he had a late tee time on Thursday, and that's crazy.
So stock down for me. You know, it's not a big stock down, but just sort of need to note it. Will Zalatoris missed cut, you know, especially since the Masters, everyone has been riding high on the Will Zalatoris bandwagon, and I definitely still am, but it's just a pump the brakes. Remember that, you know, while he may be working his way up to the top of the golf world, or, you know, top 20, 30 in the world, maybe, you know, he's a guy that is just graduated from the Corn Ferry Tour. He's going to miss cuts along the way. It's the reality of it. Yeah. He's not John Rahm. Oh no, wait. He's not Tiger Woods yet. I guess that's the one we'll go with. But
and there's a lot of other good players out there. Yeah, you know, like he's a great player, but there's a lot of them.
And golf is hard.
Yeah.
Pump the brakes. Still a great player.
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin, you're up. Who's up? Who's down?
So moving up for me is Abraham Anser. he's just been so consistently. He's two straight top fives now. He's fifth last week at the Valspar. This week he's solo second. Eight straight top 26 finishes now. So not only is he like making cuts, he's making the top half of the, you know, of the guys that made the cut after he does. And most of those are like, you know, right around, he has quite a few around 20th. He was only in 26th in one, and a lot of them are kind of more like top 20s. So he's playing very, very consistent golf. Somebody that you want to see get the win. You worry a little bit about him. Is he got a guy that can't necessarily compete at every course?
And I actually wouldn't have thought this was a great fit for him.
I know. That's the thing. That's why it's a question mark, because it's not like he doesn't play well at courses you wouldn't expect suit him. You know, he can still step up there and eke every single ounce out of, you know, the yardage he can play and compete with these guys. So he's shown he can do it. You expect that he's going to be able to win at you know, more of a course that demands accuracy and ball striking, but
right,
who knows? I just hope he can get it done. But at this point, with the consistency he's showing, he's somebody I would be, you know, happy to keep my eye on and bet, you know, top 10s, top 20s, you know, DFS lineups, whatever. He's looking good.
Yeah, he was first tee to green this week, first on approach, eighth off the tee. So, you know, the ball striking is so good for him right now.
Yeah. So then moving down, we already talked about Patrick Cantlay. You know, hopefully it's not an injury thing, you know, with his back history. But, he's just not playing well right now. So it'd be nice to see him turn it around. I'm certainly at this point not going to be having any exposure to him going into the PGA Championship. So
that's a tough one. Hopefully he finds it soon. Quick turnaround
guy, I think we're all fans of. So
yeah, okay, I got a little bit, I'm going a little bit different here. My moving up, I'm going Dean Burmeister, and there's a very obvious reason why. So he won. You're like, why? Last week he won. Why are you talking about him this week?
Whoa, welcome to last week.
Yeah, he won last week. Why are you talking about him now this week? You're just catching up on the news? No, here's why. So he needed to move into the top 100 to get that PGA Championship invite, or supposed invite. I think the top 100 after this week will get it. So he was, I think, 107th in the world coming into this week at the Canary Islands. He's over on the European Tour. He followed up his win, which moved him into 107th, with a T4 this week. And that T4 result moved him into 93rd in the world and bought him an invite to the PGA Championship. So huge week. I mean, moving up, his win set this up, but he needed to follow that up with a very, very high finish to earn that invite. And I think that's just a clutch performance. That's like Chris Kirk earning his card. As these performances that kind of get lost as the years go on, but these big ones that kind of can shape and can change players' trajectory, kind of. Moving down, I'm going Francesco Molinari. So kind of same with why I went Gary Woodland and why I went Shane Lowry this week. I kind of thought these kind of guys that, you know, been around for a while, play major courses, major championships well. You know, they could avoid big numbers. They could get around Quail Hollow. They could do well, and they're kind of being slept on. But I just don't know what to do with Molinari right now. He's kind of a guy that confuses me. He seems to have a very limited schedule, which is fine if you have exemptions and you're playing well and you're making cuts. But he's missing a lot of cuts, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. He missed a cut this week by 2 strokes. He's missed 3 of his last 4 cuts. I don't really know what's going on with Molinari, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think to me, Molinari, like, it's tough. I'm a big Molinari fan, so it's hard to kind of, I feel like, have an unbiased take on him. But he's one of these people that it seems like when it doesn't go right, it just goes very bad. Like, it doesn't kind of just, it's not quite there. It's like, it just is not even close. And so, you know, I hope he can get back the form that, you know, took him into the, you know, top 10 contending, well, winning majors and being a Ryder Cup stud and all these things. But he seems a long way from there right now.
Well, he's fallen to 133rd in the world now.
Yeah.
And I think you just need to play some more events. I don't know what, like, there's family things. He was moving this past year. The pandemic was hard. That's what I don't really
and
know.
Then, and then he did flash and have a couple top tens there. And then he's just been, you know, then he's cold top in it. Then it's kind of been a roller coaster. And when it's not good, it's just not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that puts a bow on this week, guys. We have the AT&T Byron Nelson this week at a brand new a new course of the PGA Tour, the TPC Craig Ranch. Colt Nose was subtweeting us that it's going to be a low scoring birdie fest. Look out for those kind of guys. Our preview is out on YouTube. So go check out our preview and we'll be releasing DFS shows later in the week. Anything else to add here, guys, before we wrap this up?
Let's give a quick shout out Arya Jeshanagarn. Oh, I butchered that.
when you just don't know and you just start to trail off.
This is a one take show, Kevin.
I've practiced this so many times too. Jeshanagarn.
There you go.
Arya Jeshanagarn. She came out with a 63 on Sunday to win the Honda LPGA Thailand. She's Thai. She's Thai. So
yeah.
Yep. Kind of chased down Patty Tavatanikit, nice. Another one I've been practicing. Yeah. a little bit unfortunate for Patty because she had been leading first three rounds, but she fired a 70 to close it out today, lose by two shots to Jeshanagarn. So awesome 63 today. Like she needed to post to score, obviously, because she was well out well before the leaders. So the par 5 18th, she needed a good shot in there and just like hit one of her fairway woods to about 12 feet, missed right. The eagle putt, but tapped in for bird. And she posted high enough to get her done. So, you know, good for her. I think there's three Thai women.
Yeah, I was going to say we had the 10, top.
So,
no, we had three, the top three. Like there's.
Three in the top three,
four-way tie for third, but the solo first and second were both tie, and then there's one of the ones who was tied for third was Patty Tavatanikit, and so pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's a good show at home.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I wanted to give her a shout out, and I believe it was like her 11th win or something like that on the LPGA. So good for her.
Nice. Yeah, we haven't done this in a while. Let's go around. Craig, where can people find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle here?
I want to say it's at Grandstand Craig, spelled exactly as you would think it would be.
And Kevin?
At Grandstand Kevin.
There we go. Okay, I'm at Adam Bapti. If you're listening to our podcast on mobile or wherever, pull it out, rate our podcast, give it 5 stars, leave a review. We'll talk about it on the next show. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you for watching there. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hit that thumbs up. Follow us all on Twitter, as you just heard, and then our account is at Grandstand Golf. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Yep, see you guys. Have another day.